Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady. Live only on Netflix.
With the pump fake and a one dribble inside to the long two, and he makes it. That's been his game his whole career. But look at him smiling. We go, my bad. The long two. My bad.
Welcome to another episode of The Long Two. I am Pete Rogers. He is Natty Wallach. And we are a Carmelo Stanthony podcast, but occasionally talk fantasy basketball. Natty, how you doing today?
I'm all right, dude. How you doing?
I am doing well. Can't complain. Not too much to report on my end. But on your end, you in good hosting mode by myself here, quick pats on the old backs for me, have no idea / have done no real planning for tonight's or / day's episode, but you were the one who came with this notion, this idea, this list of players, 2018 draft picks, 2019 players. Talk to me. Give me the pitch of what we're talking about this week. What's the sexy tagline we can put on to the podcast to get all them clicks?
Sexy tagline. Something with like lace.
Lace. Perfect. We're talking lace exactly. This week.
Sophomores and rookies. We're enough of the way into the season to have some real ideas about the rooks. So we wanted to talk about the sophomores as well and see what's up with both classes. The most alarming disparity I can see is that I think last draft class has basically like right around 20 dudes that are real NBA players, at least so far. And this one, 2019, does not.
There's your sexy tagline right there. The 2018 draft class was better than the 2019 draft class.
Yeah. Yes or no?
Tell me I'm wrong. So you said you got about like 19 players from the 2018 class that you're saying are definite NBA players.
Yeah. And I think it could even be more than that. Especially with some of the young Pistons like Bruce Brown, who are thrust into more minutes than perhaps they should be playing just because of the desperation of the teams involved. So I'm not really going to count those dudes because there's plenty of other ones that we can talk about instead.
So why don't we, do you have this list in front, like, do you have, are there tiers in your mind as to kind of guys like maybe the bottom 10, the top 10, and maybe we can work our way through this list, try to bring a little order and organization to the chaos that is the mind of Natty Wallach.
Oh, well, it's an ordered chaos, but I appreciate, see, that's sexy right there.
Yeah.
Everybody likes the bad boy.
Right, exactly. Who doesn't want a chaotic mind on their hands?
What's he doing? Gosh, it's so disordered. Speaking of disorder, let's talk about NBA drafts.
Nice. Hey, nice. You could just take the job right from under me.
Oh, of course I cannot. God damn that. Take that out of your mouth. How dare you? Oh, come on. Let's talk about the first three picks in both drafts. Last year's and, well, 2018's and 2019's. 2018, the first three picks were DeAndre Ayton, Marvin Bagley III, and then Trae Young / Luka Doncic. Atlanta traded with Dallas, obviously, and ended up with Ice Trae at three. In 2019, the first three picks were Zion, not bad, Ja Morant, not bad, and then RJ Barrett, who I like and had a really great game against Houston. But I think both top threes, it's two sure things and then maybes. And I think that's pretty good for a top three, especially 2 years in a row. Like Zion and Ja are stars.
Yeah.
And
And Trey and Luca are definite stars.
Yeah. And then DeAndre Ayton is playing like a star since he got the rust off. Like, since the first of the year, he's a top 30 player in fantasy.
Yeah, talk to me about DeAndre Ayton, because I know coming out tomorrow on Fate Teams, you have an article about DeAndre Ayton, basically talking about, because of those names that we just listed, obviously this, you know, Zion and Ja, they're the hype of this rookie class. Everyone's digging them. Trey and Luka have been in so many headlines and have made such an impact on the NBA already that it feels like they're seasoned veterans, and that it's preposterous to think that this is actually just their second year in the league. But DeAndre Ayton is the number one pick from last year and feels like was a surefire guy. Like, was it wasn't a shock that he went number one to the Suns, but he feels like a guy forgotten. So talk to us about DeAndre Ayton. Remind us how good Ayton actually can be, and the fact that the Suns were maybe not right, because when you have a chance to get Luka, you get Luka. But certainly the Ayton pick isn't reprehensible.
Yeah. If Ayton can turn into what Phoenix was hoping, which is a 20-10 guy and dominant defensive anchor, then great. That means that the top five in the 2018 class are all pretty good. I mean, Marvin Bagley, it's who can say, you know, it's there's been too much ups and downs, and Sacramento remains just crazy. But 3J, Jaren Jackson Jr. was the fourth pick, and then you swap Trey and Luka. I mean, that's a good top five. Mm-hmm. DeAndre Ayton, I mean, Phoenix chose him because he was a local kid. Obviously, they should have chosen Luka Doncic, as you and I were screaming to the heavens beforehand. But let's not think about it. Let's just talk about...
Let's just move on. Accept it as reality and take a big, brave step forward.
So DeAndre played the first game of the season and then got suspended for 25 games. When he came back, he was a little bit rusty. But since in the new year, let's just talk about 2020, he's basically averaging 19 points per game and 11.9 rebounds per game. As a sophomore, that would put him in the company of a bunch of really nice people. Here are the other sophomores who have done that. 19 points per game and basically 12 rebounds per game. Charles Barkley, Spencer Haywood, Jerry Lucas, Neil Johnson, Bailey Howell, Big Cat Karl Anthony Towns, the Admiral David Robinson, Bob Pettit, Bob Lanier, Elvin Hayes, Walt Bellamy, Shaq, Elgin Baylor, Bob McAdoo, Oscar Robertson, Kareem, and Wilt. That's the whole list.
Pretty good list.
That's a pretty good goddamn list. Anyone who can score 20 points is valuable. And really anyone who can grab 10 rebounds, so long as they're scoring at least 10 points a game, is going to be valuable. He looks like what Phoenix wanted. He's better in every way. His defense has improved.
Yeah.
And Phoenix, over the past like 10 games, I think they're, you know, like a top 10 defense, which has something to do with the schedule, but is also indicative of the fact that they're getting better. People are playing better. They're learning. DeAndre Ayton looks like a real basketball player. He looks like a guy that sort of in any other year would have been totally fine as the number one pick. We are always going to remember him as the guy picked before Luka and before Trey Young. But if he keeps doing this for a couple of years, scoring 20 and 10, then that argument will lessen. I mean, it will always be there because the other two guys are just, you'd rather have them.
Right. But, like if Ayton went 3 overall in this year's class, Pete, I feel like we'd be like, yeah, perfect. I feel like he would be getting the maybe more respect and attention than, obviously he missed the first part of the season because he was suspended and we talked about that. But just because of the fact that you're right, there's always this shadow. He was the number one pick. Luka and Trey, who made this just absurd. Like, I do think we should recognize and comment on the fact that the jump that both those two players have made in their sophomore season is not normal. I mean, Luka was a perennial MVP pick for the first half of the season, and Trey Young has suddenly become one of the best offensive players in the league. And so, but with, if Ayton, if you had replaced RJ Barrett with DeAndre Ayton as that third pick, I feel people would be like, yep, Zion was one. Yep, Ja was two. And Ayton was a great three for that team.
I completely agree. And I think if he had been chosen third overall after Luka and Trey last sure. year, or 2 years ago, rather, then that would make sense, too. He's DeAndre Ayton's coming into the league at a strange time for centers. You know, like, can they survive in a traditional sense? Ever since Houston went small, things have looked kind of tough for Rudy Gobert and the traditional Utah Jazz. There's an argument to be made that centers have to evolve quicker than anybody else. Otherwise, they're just going to get involved right out of the league.
Right.
DeAndre has been making some threes. And so long as a big man isn't hurt and can play and is improving in his defense, then that's a valuable resource. It's not the most valuable resource. I still don't think that you should take someone like that with the number one pick, especially when elite wings are available. Mm. But, you know, if it works out, then that's going to be a bonus for the most important part of Phoenix, which is Devin Booker. Devin Booker did need someone on the inside. And when Phoenix was without DeAndre Ayton, they got out to that really quick start. And it was because you had a center who could pull defense out and let Devin Booker just drive in.
Right.
And they looked great.
Aaron Bain was that perimeter, had enough of a three-point shooter. I mean, he was shooting lights out to start the season, but on a career was enough of a three-point shooting threat that defenses had to take him seriously.
And if Ayton can get even a little bit of that, then it will help immensely.
Sure, but just shoot 30%, and that's at least something you need to worry about.
And, you know, he's super young, as is almost everybody else on the team, except for Ricky Rubio.
Everyone we feel like we talk about in this league.
Yeah, I know. We could have, like, a CP3 discussion and just, you know, sip
Earl
Grey
tea. He's super young.
Yeah. Yeah, we can read excerpts from Mill and the Floss and, you know, listen to seriously terrible jazz from the 40s. Getting back to DeAndre Ayton, he's a guy that we should all believe in because he does have high pedigree. Like, it's not like Phoenix chose a dude that was 15th on people's draft lists. You know, he was a consensus top five pick.
Yeah.
And
I'd say even consensus top three. I mean,
sure.
I feel like no one, Luka thought was going to be very good, but he had the European superstition about him. I feel like Trey, no one thought Trey was going to be this freakishly talented. I think they knew that he was an elite 3-point shooter, but that was kind of what I feel like his thought was his ceiling. And I felt like Ayton was the guy who everyone's like, yeah, the NBA is changing away from your traditional center. But if it ever swings back that way, slash, he is good enough that he can still be like, still make an impact on the court, obviously.
And before the season, we talked about it. We said that if Ayton is himself, he's just going to fall into 20 and 10.
Right.
And that's exactly what is happening. It's, you know, it has to do with how Phoenix wants to play, but it also has to do with just the opportunity. He's a big man on that team. And when you have Devin Booker, you should be able to get some easy buckets. It's nice to see. Like, I sort of feel like DeAndre Ayton and Markelle Fultz were both sort of forgotten in the first half of the season. And it's really nice to see them both improving and doing well.
Do you think Ayton, his ascension or just his production, is it too late to buy low on him in fantasy? Do you think in dynasty leagues or in redraft leagues that he's going to be too much of a prize commodity now, given how he's rebounded both actually and also from the suspension and back into the league?
I mean, it's hard to miss 20 and 10. That kind of production makes you a top 20 player in fantasy. Right. And I believe he's been a top 15 player on ESPN Basic over the past month. So I do think that it will cost a lot to trade for him. But if you had him and someone was offering a really nice package, I would seriously consider it. But that's just because of, you know, big man bigotry.
Sure.
Like, you know, anything could happen at any time. I'd rather have two really solid wings, maybe, or whatever, depending on the construction of your team. But honestly, if I had drafted him originally, I don't think I'd trade him for much of anything unless it was like one of the players we're talking about right now.
Right, unless it's a Godfather offer. No, I mean, if you draft him originally, you're on cloud nine right now because you've invested this much time into him and now he's like, oh, this is the exact player who I was thought I was getting. And you're also, if you're the guy who drafted him in a dynasty league and then traded him at the end of his rookie year or early in this season because of the suspension, you're kicking yourself hard.
And not for nothing, but guys that can get over 10 points and over 10 rebounds are pretty rare.
I've heard double doubles are pretty good and tough to get.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's weird to think that rebounds are being democratized because of the way the NBA is beginning to play, like along with assists. And we just sort of maybe lost a dominant traditional center with Drummond because who knows if he's injured in Cleveland, who knows how they're going to play. Like he'll have a big game every couple of games, but he'll have super duds too. Like no one really knows what the plan is there or how healthy he is. So Ayton might be even more rare than he was just a couple of weeks ago before the trade deadline. Yeah. He looks like a guy that is going to be an unsexy but extremely solid pick in fantasy drafts going forward. And, you know, he's a baby. He's a soft.
Yeah.
He is. You know, he didn't miss time this year due to injury. He was suspended. So, like, we shouldn't consider him
Which means he's actually stronger than the traditional NBA player.
Yeah, I mean, I do think that, like, his first 10 games back, it was like...
He's cheated to enhance himself and is not injured. He didn't, you know, he got that rest, and he's stronger because of the, you know, drugs he was using, and now he's ready to take this league by storm.
Well, if anyone knows anything about cheating, it's a Boston sports aficionado.
All I'm saying,
nice job by you,
is we have a lot
like
of championships.
I can smell cheating. I know what cheating looks like.
Cheat to win. What other sophomores or rookies are particularly you want to touch on from your 19?
Okay. So we went over the first three. By the way, Trae Young is number 5 on the ESPN player rater for the year. So that's
he's good. He's decent. Yeah.
RJ Barrett, it's too young. It's too soon to tell, but I don't think he's going to be the rookie of the year like I said that he would be. So for the 2019 draft, for the rest of the rookies, I really only have like a handful of names. Darius Garland went 5th. He's super young and has looked super bad at times, but I still think that there's talent there. Kobe White, basically the same thing.
Yeah.
He's been a top 60 player over the past month. PJ Washington, who I absolutely adore, is a top 150 player in the
flaming start this season.
He was fantastic. Yeah. You can just see how a couple of years and a couple more pounds of muscle on him, he's going to be absolutely dynamite.
He's going to be the epitome of the this league now wing slash forward player.
Yeah, I mean, their front court is going to be just extremely switchable. It's, you know, people are sort of trying to look like the Celtics now, I think, where you have sort of like front court wings, like guys that can defend up a level, or a guy that can defend every level, like Marcus Smart, who is back tonight. Mm-hmm. And those kinds of players are just, and everyone has long arms, obviously. Those kinds of players are just the ones that are the most valuable right now because they can go fast and they can score in transition and they can rebound and they can pass. You know, everybody's trying to look like LeBron and they have been since he came into the league. And now we're finally starting to sort of see it. These huge dudes. I mean, it's still crazy that Zion can move as quickly as he does. He is.
Oh, it's preposterous.
Fucking enormous.
Doesn't make sense.
So anyway, PJ Washington, who is a top 150 player on the year. Matisse Thybul is a real player, in my opinion. You know, I'm hoping the scoring will come, and this is a strange year to be a young guy in Philadelphia, so I'm not going to blame him too much.
Yeah, that's fair.
Brandon Clark on Memphis has been a top 100 player on the year. I like him a lot.
Yep.
He was chosen 21st.
Wish the Celtics had gotten him, but...
Yeah, he looks really, really good. Matisse Thybul went right before him at 20, and I think the Celtics wanted him too. And then, Kendrick Nunn, who's a top 100 player on the year, went undrafted.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there are some other players that I'm intrigued by. Both of the rookies in Atlanta, Cam Reddish and DeAndre Hunter, they've looked okay at times. I haven't been super impressed with them. Since the new year started, they're both scoring 12 points per game. I mean, they're doing better. They're learning. It's just they feel like, regular rookies. Like, they're not, Luka.
Right. They're not stepping in and immediately having a game-changing or franchise-changing. And, I mean, that's a very rare thing to say. But I would say that they're not even on, like, RJ Barrett's level.
Yeah, I don't think that they'll get max contracts when their rookie contracts are up, but I do think that eventually, like later in their 20s, they will be totally solid rotation players if they can continue to improve.
Yeah.
Also, that team, there are a lot of mouths to feed in Atlanta. There's Ice Trey. There's John Collins, who has been absolutely fucking sensational.
Shaboy, let's do it.
Yeah, I mean, he's just fantastic. In the new year, he's averaging 22 points and 10.1 rebounds. That's pretty good. Kevin Huerter is there. There's a lot of people on that team that sort of need to be able to have the ball. And then there's two rookies. I don't even know if they'll keep both of them in the offseason. I sort of feel like they'll combine one and make a trade. But anyway, that's sort of, everybody's really young, and there were a bunch of really good rookies from 2 years ago. So it sort of makes sense that there's a ton of sophomores that are sort of crowding the scene.
Yeah.
Was there anyone else from 2019 that you could think of?
No. I think that's a good list. I mean, there's obviously I could talk my Celtics guys, but none of them have made such an impact to the point where you're like fully locked in.
Yeah, I like Time Lord. I really hope that he does well. But, has he really done enough to prove that he's an actual rotation? Yeah. So
no, I mean, he's well laid, but I'm saying like Grant Williams or Romeo Langford. Like, those are guys. Grant Williams has shown a little bit, but they haven't quite made impacts enough to the point where we're going to be talking about
them. Sure. Admiral Schofield hasn't played enough in D.C.
yep. All right, we're going to take a quick ad break, but when we come back, I have Natty talk about sexy headlines that'll get the people clicking. I got a question for you, which we'll answer when we get back from this ad break.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
All right. We are back. And as I alluded to, talk about sexy. Natty. We're talking rookies, we're talking sophomores, we're looking 2016, 2018. Feels like the sexy natural question. You are an NBA GM for the Seattle Supersonics.
Nice.
Thank you. Let's give them a team.
Basically
again.
About as far away from Detroit as you can get in the continental
United
States.
I figured if we put you in charge of the Pistons, you'd probably spend the first couple hours as GM just weeping over the current team that you've taken over and you're unsure as to what your next steps are going to be. So we'll start you with a completely blank slate. Give Seattle a team. we're getting off track from my super sexy question. The two headliners from the last two drafts, who would you rather have, Zion or Luka?
I hate this question.
I love this question.
This is like... If you ever want to ruin a dinner party, like everyone sat down to eat and there's just sort of a pause and, you know, you have that devil on your shoulder and you're like, man, I could really throw a stink bomb right in the middle of this. You can ask people, who would you save if you could, Tupac or Biggie? And it just ruins the night. And that's what this is too.
This is because this what your family is? This is a real breaking point for your family at family dinner.
Oh no, I just heard this from friends.
Like, split between Biggie and Tupac.
I heard this on the subway. I would never do something like that. That's terrible.
Your Uncle Dan is just like, I swear to God, if anyone picks Tupac, they're not a part of the family. And then your mom's like, oh, fuck you. Biggie is the one to be.
It just doesn't end well because the person that asked the question would be like, no, you have to choose. But the person that asked the question is obviously going to deflect when people ask them. You're like, I already know. Yeah, for sure. And then you just let everybody go to pieces. It's better than talking politics because, you know, it's funny rather than terrifying.
Because it's a beautiful hypothetical that you know, if there's an actual answer, it doesn't threaten the existence of all humanity.
Fact. So Luka versus Zion would have to come down to, I mean, like there's all these technicalities you could use, like, you know, Zion's really heavy, or, you know, Luka doesn't really seem to have his conditioning, and the kind of construction that Luka's on in terms of team allows him to be a bigger star than Zion does when there's like 78 other really good players on that team. I think it would come down to, who do you like watching more? And it's hard not to say Zion, even though Luka is fucking amazing. Luka is so smooth. Like, Luka is the sexy pick.
Yes.
Zion, though, is a fucking force of nature. And it, like, when he dunks, it's just absolutely nuts. It is very Charles Barkley. It is very just, you know, the third year of LeBron's career when he really like turned into a man all of a sudden. Mm-hmm. You were like, oh shit, he's just gonna go to the Eastern Conference Finals every year. Yeah. Okay, cool. If I were the GM though, who is the best player to pick to help me win in the long term, I think you have to go with Luka because of the distribution. Like, he can run your team. I think it would be more difficult to run a team's offense through Zion with him as the ultimate fulcrum. Like, I think Zion needs a good point guard in order to succeed. Whereas with Luka, I think you give him anything and he'll be able to figure it out. He's sure. That smart.
I agree. I think that is true. The two things I would say. So my pick is Zion. If I'm the GM of the Seattle Supersonics, not that I need this. If the Sonics ever get if Seattle ever gets a team again, I don't think it's not going to be a risk of trying to get butts in seats. But Zion, I think, puts more butts in seats than Luka does because of his ferocious dunking. And that's still just carrying so much weight in terms of just, you know, basketball entertainment.
I would disagree with you just real fast. Oh. Zion gets people out of their seats. Okay. He gets butts out. Like, everyone jumps up when he slams down. It is incredible. Absolutely. But he's, like, you can hear him dunk. You know what I'm saying?
He is the closest, like, he is a player whom if they never got created breakaway rims, he would be breaking backboards consistently.
He's awesome. That game against the Lakers was so goddamn fucking cool. It was just amazing. And we're gonna get at least a few more years of that with LeBron.
We're gonna get this as the 1-8 matchup in the West. It's gonna happen.
Yeah, a bunch of spots are saying that that the Pellies have the best chances, even though they're down.
But the other thing
I feel so bad that everyone's like, man, yeah, fuck Memphis.
Fuck Memphis. Well, Memphis has a lot to be excited about, but they're just not as exciting as they could be. Not as exciting. Plus, there's just so many good storylines to have Pelicans versus Lakers.
Sure, but like Memphis, in we don't talk about the Pelicans like, oh, it would be awesome for Jrue Holiday to make the playoffs, or it would be awesome for JJ Redick to keep his streak alive. We're only talking about Zion. You know, like, it's, we just want to see him play LeBron. Like, it doesn't even matter what the context is.
I love to see Brandon Ingram and Lonzo get some sweet, sweet revenge on the Lakers.
There's, I mean, what percentage chance do they have of?
Oh, zero. But they're getting two games. I've already, I'm dying on that hill. They're going to make the eighth seed and they're going to get two games against the Lakers. It's going to be 4-2-game series. But I want to finish my thing on Zion. Because I do think that Zion, I think his passing has been a surprising part of his game. And I agree with you. Yes, he's nowhere near the level of Luka in terms of running and facilitating an offense. But I do think that that is something that if you really put a lot of time and invested in, he could become a Jokic kind of player.
I mean, hopefully he does. Right. Hopefully he turns into LeBron. Jesus.
I mean, that would be gorgeous. But so I just think, I think that Zion has all of the raw tools to basically be great at everything, right? And yeah, it's the LeBron comparison where he's, I mean, he's not shooting a lot, but he's shooting 42% from three right now. He's shooting less than one a game. So it's not, you know.
Dude, he doesn't need to. He just backs people down in the post. Which
exactly.
Which he's like doing what Rudy Gobert should have been doing during those Houston games.
And the thing is that like in crunch time, if I need to get a bucket, Zion just is so goddamn big and physical. I feel like he has a little bit of the Marcus Smart in him where a big play needs to happen and somehow Zion finds a way to make it happen.
By the way, Marcus Smart just made a 28-foot three-point jumper.
Jesus Christ. I mean, I love you, Marcus, but that is the most Marcus shot of all time.
It's great.
Was it just on a pull up
over Brooklyn? By the
did
way,
did he just nice? Was it just on a breakaway?
Yeah, it was like
fast break.
One just, second was off the play clock.
Fuck yes, never changed, Marcus. Never
he's
fucking changed.
I would say to your point that it takes time and effort and reps to get better at being like a main ball distributor.
Yes,
and that's another argument in Luka's case because he's been doing that.
Sure.
He's been playing in Europe. Like
he's been the ball distributor for fucking he's been playing since 13 years old.
Yeah, right. He has a head start on Zion in a lot of ways. And he's also been playing against, you know, like men professionally in Europe. So even though Zion looks overpowering, Luka still came into the league with a little bit more know-how. Like he started off, I think, a rung higher just because there was less that he needed to do to acclimate. And Zion looked great right away, obviously.
Yeah.
But he's going to look even better as he goes along. And I sort of wonder, and I really hate myself for this, but it's like, what if Zion just had his own team? You know, like what if it was just scrubs and they were like, yeah, well, we're building around, because even though it's awesome and I hope that Ingram and Zion are together for 10 years, because I think that tandem could really do something special. But Luka got his own team, you know?
Luka also has Porzingis. I mean, I mean, that's fair. Yeah. But you're right. The team is undeniably Luka's team. And that's partially because of the fact that he's the primary facilitator and because he's, you know, the best player on that team. And it doesn't feel quite yet that, and there might be a power struggle if, like, whether or not Zion is, if the Pelicans officially become Zion's team. Like, I think when you look at them, he's the player you always tune in to watch. But if the game comes down to crunch minutes, I feel like it's going to be in Ingram's hand currently as the roster is constructed.
Yeah, dude, sure. Zion is 5 minutes old and hasn't played any basketball, and Brandon Ingram has been here a minute. You know, like there's so much potential in Zion that we think about him and we talk about him sort of in terms of like a 5-year pro.
Yeah.
And he also just sort of looks that way. Backing dudes down in the post. It's amazing. It's so cool to watch.
Big motherfucker.
Dude, low post offense. That is awesome. Bring it back. Let's do it. But it's also really important to remember that he will need an outside shot in order to truly be an effective player. Yep. Like we all assume that his trajectory will continue to go sky high and that all facets of his game will improve. And they should.
Right.
But not all progress is linear, as we keep saying. So it's 1A and 1B, and it's really just tied for one, Luka and Zion. I mean, like, he and Zion will probably be the captains of the All-Star team in 5 years, and they'll be the ones. As soon as Giannis sort of ages out of it, like, they'll be the next ones. And even though it'd be fucking bitching to watch them play together, I doubt we ever see them on the same team outside of an All-Star game. Like, it would be weird if they hooked up. Maybe
There's no way. Okay, who's most likely? Because it would only come with one of those guys saying, like, I'm forcing my way out, right? There's no way either of those guys are ever going to hit free agency unless, God forbid, you're having some sort of catastrophic injury that they have to, like, recuperate from. And maybe that lets them hit free agency. But it seems like it's coming from Zion or Luka being like, hey, you need to trade me, and I want to go to play with the other one.
Yeah, like what Anthony Davis just did.
Right.
Trade me to another Western team, a main competitor of yours.
Trade me to the league.
And yeah, so, I mean, obviously it could happen, but that was...
Okay.
I would think that's sort of a unique case. Like, how many LeBrons are out there? You know.
Well, all I'm going to say... And this will be the last thing we touch on, and then we can move to maybe some studs and duds for the week. But I feel like the most likely scenario is just that you're going to have Zion and Luka in the next two-ish years. They're not going to be making the, play deep into the playoffs. They're going to keep getting knocked off in the first round. They're going to be like, you know what? I'm sick of this shit. We want to not only play together, but we want to play for a team that has the pieces to really get us to a championship. And they're going to want to play with the best player in the NBA at that point. And so they're just going to force their way to the Celtics and play with Tatum. I mean, that's what we know is going to happen, is we know it's going to be Luka, Tatum, and Zion just taking over this league. And they're going to put a run against Bill Russell for his 13 championships.
And Tice, obviously.
And like, Tice.
He's the reason. He's
going
straw
to be the
that
catalyst.
The drink.
Exactly. Like, Luka and Zion are like, we. It would be fun to play with Tatum, the perennial MVP, best player in the NBA, but Daniel fucking Tice, there's only one life and you only get one chance of playing with Daniel fucking Tice, and we're going to take that opportunity.
YOLO. Just get there. I mean, you'll never lose again.
Right. I mean, that's just that's the magic of Tice is... He's perfect.
Yo, if the Pelicans somehow beat the Lakers in the first round,
oh my God,
do you think LeBron would have a moment where he'd be like, shit, maybe
oh
I should force myself to New Orleans?
Oh my God. Oh my God.
Like, Anthony Davis didn't do much to help me. Oh, it'd be huge. It would be.
Oh my God. The world would melt. The world would explode.
Like, it might go down as the most important first round series of all time.
I think crazy. first take would just cease to exist.
Yeah, people wouldn't know what to do, and then I think the Pelicans would probably like lose really hard in the next round.
Oh, the Pelicans would just get absolutely whopped. There's no way they would push. Right,
that would be so funny.
That would be incredible.
Because in a weird way, the Pelicans, like, with Derek Favors, I mean, they're sort of just as big up front as the Lakers are, but they have better guards. So it's like one team has LeBron.
Are we doing this right now?
No, we shouldn't. And J.J. Redick is hurt, I think. Like, they're not even in the playoffs. Oh, poor Memphis. Jesus. Like, what if Memphis beat LeBron? What if they did, man? What if they did?
Power to you if they did.
Before we move on to studs though, I just did want to mention, we mentioned Kendrick Nunn as an undrafted free agent from 2019's draft. Duncan Robinson, who is
your boy, you are on the Duncan Robinson train.
Well, go blue. I mean, if I wasn't a Michigan fan, I might not know who he is, but he's a top 100 player on the year, and he was undrafted as well. So even though drafts seem thin, if the right player gets picked up by the right team, they can turn into a star.
Totally. We got a stud for the week, a dud for the week, someone who's going to be great, someone who's going to be bad in fantasy for the rest of the week, Wednesday on. We keep track of these things. Natty, currently 12-8. Not bad. Okay, I am a consistent 500, 10-10, but I'm in that double digits.
Double-double.
Double-double, so I'm coming for you. Yeah, Natty, who's your stud for this week?
Okay, my stud for the week, and I kind of hate doing this.
Yes.
For multiple reasons. But
Derrick Rose.
Oh, no. He's injured and will be out for the next 2 weeks.
Oh,
and
good.
They might shut him down for the season because he's Derrick Rose.
Good thing you traded him for max value.
Dude, there are some days I can't. I just wake up and I'm like, we didn't trade that son of a bitch. We traded Drum, but for nothing. Oh, my God. Even though Brandon Knight's back on the team and he hasn't been terrible, actually. I don't want to talk about it. Let's talk about a good player on the Pistons. Okay, so the Pistons are going up against the Oklahoma City Thunder, the Utah Jazz, and the New York Knicks for the rest of the week. And I know people joke about the New York Knicks, but they have good interior presence, and they just beat the fucking Rockets, and that was an awesome game. That was just
incredible.
It was strangely one of the best games of the season, even though it was pretty ugly.
And it beautifully doesn't mean you need to apologize to the Rockets for saying that their trading away center was a dumb play.
Right. I mean, they lost it on rebounds, and they just couldn't get shots when they needed to, which has been their downfall every playoff. You know, like some years they make 27 threes in a row, and some years they don't make any. And that kind of high variance, that's why you want a big man who can just get you a bucket sometimes. But whatever. It's worked on everyone but the Knicks, so maybe we should just say that it will work in the playoffs too, since that is the opposite of the Knicks. Anyway, Christian Wood. Since February 3rd, he is averaging 20-plus points per game, 9-plus rebounds per game, 1-plus block per game, 1.5 three-pointers made on 38% shooting from three. He good.
He good.
He's on a bad team. So Christian Wood is my stud for the week. I know it's a tough schedule. Like the Thunder, the Jazz, and the Knicks, that's three real centers. That's Steven Adams, that's Rudy Gobert, and that's Mitch Robb. But I think that Christian Wood is sort of one of the only dudes left on the Pistons. And he has played well against other teams with pretty nice front courts. So I'm, you know, a wish and a prayer. Let's go Pistons. Let's go Christian Wood.
I like it. And I am obviously a fan of it because he's on my fantasy, my dynasty.
Yeah, there you go.
I am all here for speaking a good week into existence for him. And I'm going to speak a good week into existence for another player on my team who we talked about. John Collins for the Atlanta Hawks.
Yes.
The Hawks play the Wizards and the Grizzlies this week.
Yeah. Yeah.
Need I say more?
He looks great. He looks great. That team, I can't really tell if their trade deadline moves like helped all
off.
That much.
Yeah.
Yeah, it just sort of seems like they changed things, but I don't know if those things would have happened anyway.
But it's also looking, I mean, I think those deadlines moves felt like more kind of like we're thinking maybe a little to the future. Getting Clint Capella and those guys, but
and
no.
Satisfy Ice Tray.
Right, exactly. And then my dud for the week, Chris Middleton is coming off of a neck injury. He's cleared to play. He played against Miami, only got you, he scored 12 points and had 7 rebounds, but only got you 7 fantasy points on ESPN. And the rest of the week, he is taking on, let's look at their schedule, Pacers, Lakers, and Suns.
That's a little tough.
Which is a tough lineup to go against, and so I think he is going to take a little time to come back from his injury.
I will say this: I feel like when I doubt Chris Middleton, he proves me wrong.
It's exactly when right. Like, oh yeah,
yeah. Like this whole season has been about him basically giving me a middle finger for saying that Brogdon was better, and I would rather have had Brogdon than Chris Middleton.
Which is exactly
even though Brogdon's
true.
Been great.
Like we know that Chris Middleton listens to the podcast and has been playing with a vengeance to prove Natty wrong.
He's the one guy that follows us. Like everybody else, you know, they read us, but he follows.
But he
us.
Knows. He knows what's going on.
The Bucks are still on pace to win 70 games. I mean, Chris Middleton, if Giannis wasn't on that team and Chris Middleton was playing this way, everyone would know his name, you know? Yeah.
Yep. Who's your dud?
So my dud, okay, I have two. I can't choose. I mean, I want to say PJ Tucker because he's going up against the Clippers, the Hornets, and Orlando. And I sort of feel like that's going to be really, really, really tough for him.
Yeah, it's a tough group of games to play against.
And it's not like he delivers a lot. I mean, he delivers peripheral fantasy stats. But, I mean, that's going to be three pretty tough games, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think they'll also be a little bit slower. So I think that his opportunities will be even fewer. And you know what? That's who I'm going with. Because, yeah, I just really don't. He's going to get so beat up. You know, like watching that Knicks game really brought it home to me is that, like, if PJ Tucker can't be out on the court, then that's a serious problem for Houston.
Yeah. The Houston thing, when it works super well. It obviously worked against the Celtics twice. But when it does, it's just a matter of in a 7-game series with PJ Tucker, with Robert Covington, with those guys just taking the hits. And maybe maybe the power forward center role was like what he was meant to play because he's been thriving there. But eventually,
he missed some defensive assignments last night. Like, it's still, these guys are still playing out of position.
Totally.
You know?
But when you bang with the big guys for too long, the banging gets tough.
And also, there, if you're usually, when you're being required to play elite defense, it's because you're not being asked to put as much effort into the other end of the court. So, Robert Covington is awesome. Big Bob Covington, everybody loves him. And I still think that was a great trade for them. And they still do have Tyson Chandler. And I would imagine if he's any kind of game ready that he'll actually play in the playoffs just for at least like 5 minutes. But whatever. Let's not talk about them. Fuck them. Let's talk about Carmelo real fast. Because he's the other guy that I considered for my studs, but I thought that we would just do it as a, you know, podcast together.
Just generally, we are in support of Carmelo, who's been playing incredible basketball recently.
Totally. And I think that Dame coming back is actually going to help him. Yes. Like, I think he's going to walk into more open shots. I think his efficiency will go up. He's been doing really well. And the Blazers go up against the Wizards, the Suns, and the Kings. I think all three of those are winnable games for Portland. And I think that Carmelo is going to just look like a really good, useful piece next to Portland's incredible backcourt now that the maestro is back.
And can we also,
I love Carmelo.
Can we take a moment to give the man some love for coming out of free agency, coming off of a season last year checkered with all kinds of issues that weren't really his fault, basically was pushed out of the NBA, comes back, playing 32 minutes a game, averaging 15 points, 6.5 rebounds, 1.5 assists, making almost 1.5 threes a game. Like, good on you. Good on you to come back and play 30-plus minutes a game and show who's good.
Absolutely. He was always a useful player. His defense is what it is, and it always has been. But Melo has always been a useful player who can score for you. And I bet a bunch of teams out there are sort of kicking themselves because Portland got him for nothing. So, I mean, there's already been like rumors, oh, the Knicks might want to bring him back.
And you're like, hell, give me a When the Knicks give him a max contract to bring him back this year, this offseason, James Dolan, you have outdone yourself.
It's like if he does come back to New York, first of all, it'll be sort of sad. I kind of like him in Portland. I like him with that backcourt. And second of all, if he does come back here, he will immediately get in the way of Kevin Knox and RJ Barrett. So it doesn't even make any sense.
It writes itself. It's too good.
Oh, God. Anyway, go Melo forever. Love
you. Amen. And with that, we will sign off and say we love you, dear listeners. Make sure to subscribe to the podcast wherever you get your podcasts. Fake Teams podcast channel is what we're under, so search for that in iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher. We are there. We come out weekly, so make sure to subscribe. Follow us on Twitter at The Long 2 Podcast, and we will be back at you next week. Until then, Nadia, enjoy yourself.
Have a great week, bud.